Gil McGregor from NBA Sound System here, and I want to tell you about Religion of Sports and PRX's latest show, Roughhousing. Hazing has been a part of American life for hundreds of years, and today, in high school sports, it's happening a lot more often than you might think. Journalist Iggy Monda takes listeners inside high school locker rooms to meet people on all sides of the story and try to find out why kids haze in the first place. Why do any of us do it, and what does it say about us? Listen to Roughhousing on Apple Podcasts now. Welcome into NBA Sound System. My name is Gil McGregor, back joined again by my man, Kyle Irving. It's not even welcome back anymore, Kyle. You're the sixth man. You're just a part of this show as well. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. It's March Madness season, NBA draft season, and I can't wait for it all to get underway this week.
I know I've said it before, like on here before, that NBA draft season is Kyle Irving season, and March Madness is kind of the unofficial beginning of the NBA draft season, even though it's year-round. Obviously, we've been talking about some prospects that are in this year's draft, like Victor Wembanyama, for a while. But March Madness gives us an opportunity to talk about the guys who are playing at the college level. Got plenty to get through on this week's episode, including some of the prospects to keep an eye on. We'll talk about the Raptors, of course, some of the Canadian prospects in the NCAA tournament. But I think we have to start on NBA Sound System with what's going on in the NBA. Since the last time we talked, a lot has happened. There have been major injuries to star players. I think the biggest one is Kevin Durant. Poor Suns fans. They get excited about Kevin Durant making his debut in the Valley of the Sun. Turns his ankle during pregame warmups. If you haven't gone to the Sporting News on Twitter, we got a really good shot of that. Shout out to our coworker Riley, who was on the ground in Phoenix for that game. KD turns his ankle. Now he's out 2 to 3 weeks. Seemed like a harmless ankle turn, but now like what did the Suns do to have this bad luck? Everything was starting to click, and now KD won't play for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, the Suns are, you know, they were planning on using this time to really, you know, get into a groove with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant and Chris Paul in the new look Suns. And now all of a sudden, they're kind of right back where they started before without Kevin Durant. So, you know, I think we saw glimpses in those few games that Kevin Durant did play with the Suns, just how easy this is going to be for him to play alongside Devin Booker and Chris Paul. You know, even though they all kind of operate in that mid-range area, Chris Paul is, you know, one of the best in the league at setting the table and getting guys in the right spots and knowing when to utilize mismatches. And, you know, with KD on one wing and Devin Booker on the other, we saw very quickly how lethal this trio can be. I mean, Devin Booker had three of his best games in the season. He went for over 30 points in his first three games alongside Kevin Durant, and his assist numbers are going up. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with just give the ball to Kevin, get out of the way, and he'll probably get you an assist by pulling up for a mid-range jumper. And you know, I don't think that it's going to take a lot of time for this team to mesh. I don't think I don't necessarily think they needed all of these games at the end of the season to kind of gain that continuity come playoff time. But, you know, obviously it doesn't help that Kevin Durant is now going to miss some time, and maybe they're just being precautious, but, you know, the Suns are going to have to kind of get things back into gear right before the playoffs kick off, you know, in about a month from now.
Yeah, that was the thing that I was going to say about them, just watching them play. Life was so easy for everybody. Obviously, it's Kevin Durant on the team, but specifically Devin Booker. They were going to be a crazy duo. Just last week, I'm on the show hyping up how D-Book could be one of Kevin Durant's best teammates he's ever had. And now here we are waiting for a little while. I think the biggest thing is the Kings and the Grizzlies can maybe exhale a little bit, because the Suns were looking very much primed to maybe make a real play for one of those top two spots in the Western Conference. And now without Kevin Durant, they're still a very good team, but I think that they're going to be more focused on getting to the finish line close to full strength as possible, rather than trying to make a run as far as seeding goes. One more thing going on in the NBA that you might not have paid attention to, just because there's been so much going on with March Madness and NCAA basketball. The Nuggets on a little bit of a skid, while the 76ers are rolling right now. And dare I say, the MVP discussion may be opening back up. I feel like, at least personally, I've seen more about it on social media, on Twitter, even in our Slack messages with our coworkers over the past 4 or 5 days, just making it seem like the doors kind of cracked open after we thought it was a foregone conclusion that Jokic was going to run away with his third straight MVP. Do you still think that's the case? Or over this last month before the playoffs, like you just said, maybe Joel Embiid makes a run for it?
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like people are looking for any reason possible to not give Nikola Jokic his third straight MVP. I mean, the guy is still averaging a triple-double on the team that's in first place in the West. You know, in 2017 when Russell Westbrook did it, obviously that was absolutely incredible. We hadn't seen anybody average a triple-double since Oscar Robertson, but his team finished sixth in the West and he still earned the MVP award. So, you know, if Jokic were to finish the season averaging a triple-double, and even though the Nuggets are on a skid, I mean, they still have, I think, a 5-game lead on second place in the Western Conference. So I don't know how the award wouldn't land in Nikola Jokic's hands for the third straight year, aside from voter fatigue. But with that being said, Joel Embiid is making it very interesting. I mean, over this 5-game win streak, he's averaging 37 points per game. He's having one of the most dominant stretches of his career. You know, he likes to play it off and pretend like he doesn't care about the MVP award. I actually shouldn't say that, because he obviously was, you know, a little aggravated that he didn't win the award last year, but I think he's kind of gotten past that and he's moved on to, I'm all about a championship and everything like that. But you know, he's making one heck of a push for MVP at the end of the season here. And, you know, Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets, like I said, they're holding down that top spot. It's going to be tough for him to surrender that lead on the MVP race, but you know, Joel Embiid is doing everything he can to make sure we have an interesting discussion the same way that we did this time last year between these two centers.
Yeah, I think that's the crazy part. Like, Joel Embiid did kind of stumble out of the gates because he was dealing with some injuries to start the season. But to look at how crazy his numbers are, considering the fact that he wasn't that great or wasn't himself to start the season, I think that says a lot about what he's done since that first 10 to 15 games of the year. And I think you said it perfectly. Like, he's kind of gotten past the point where he's accepted that he's probably not going to be an All-NBA first teamer so long as Jokic is in the league, unless they change the position designation. And he's probably going to finish second or third in MVP voting so long as Nikola Jokic is averaging a triple-double for the number one team in the Western Conference. So the focus will shift to trying to lift the 76ers out of the second round first. They got to get there first. Haven't been there since 2001. But then to win an NBA title, it's been a rough year for Philadelphia sports fans. So maybe the 76ers can give them something to cheer about. Now, of course, talking about competing for a title, it is March. We talked about the fact that a lot of people aren't paying that much attention to what's going on in the NBA because March Madness, it's impossible to ignore. The Field of 68 was announced over the weekend, Selection Sunday, big time in college basketball, but big time for basketball fans like you and myself. So I think the big thing that we talk about usually, because it kind of goes hand in hand, you tune into March Madness because, you know, you're going to see the top pick play, or more often than not. I mean, in years past, you know, we didn't see Ben Simmons or Markel Fultz play in the tournament. But last year, just last year, we watched Paolo Banchero. We saw Zion Williamson play with Duke in the NCAA tournament. And I'm really mad at myself right now for only naming Duke prospects right now, but you get where I'm going with that. But I think this year is very unique. And before we start talking about the tournament itself, but, you know, we talked about a Victor Wembanyama and a Scoot Henderson, the Thompson twins playing overtime elite. What do you think it says about the changing landscape in basketball from your perspective as a draft expert and analyst that fewer and fewer of these top guys who we see, you know, on the draft boards are playing in the NCAA?
I actually think it's really cool. I know there are probably a lot of college basketball purists that miss that aspect of having all the top prospects playing in the NCAA, playing in March Madness, but it's very unique. And it's cool that in the past couple of years, we've seen guys take different routes to the league and still find a way to be successful. I think about someone like LaMelo Ball, who traveled all over the world before he finally landed in the NBA. And he's been awesome, you know, aside from injuries, he's been awesome to start his career. You know, a lot of the G League Ignite guys, they're still trying to figure out where they fit in the NBA on their respective teams. But guys like Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga, you know, have shown a ton of promise already in the league. And it's cool to see players coming from all over the world, players coming from all these different leagues and, you know, finding their way at the top of NBA draft boards. Obviously, Victor Wembanyama is a unicorn and we've never seen anything like him. And there's, you know, little to no hesitation that he's going to be incredible in the NBA. But, you know, you brought up Scoot Henderson, who's been in the G League for 2 years playing against, you know, other professional players. You bring up, you know, Amen and Ausar Thompson, who, you know, those are two guys who are projected to be in the top 10. They just ran through the overtime elite and they swept in the overtime elite finals. And, you know, Ausar was the overtime elite MVP, but Amen is the one who people believe could be the better NBA prospect. So, you know, there's a ton of talent outside of the NCAA tournament, but at the same time, there are still a lot of good, you know, high level NBA pro caliber prospects that are going to be playing in March that NBA fans should still be excited about.
Yeah, I think one thing, or I guess two things I think about after you said that, listening to those names and looking at your most recent mock draft that you did on the Sporting News. Go check that out if you haven't already. Obviously, Victor Wembanyama is maintaining that number one spot, and that's likely going to that's going to remain the same. Not likely. That's going to be the same regardless of what happens moving forward. I guess I want to start talking about him first, because I know we're going to talk more about these NCAA prospects in a little bit. But, you know, I kind of had a thought, and maybe it's me just, you know, thinking too much, but a lot of people have compared Wembanyama to LeBron, obviously just the hype level or whatever. But thinking about him from a different perspective, especially now that he's reportedly grown to 7'5", thinking back to Yao and all the hype surrounding Yao before, like, you know, this guy that was larger than life. It's a little bit different because social media, Wimby has already come over to the States and played, but just a guy who is from a country outside of the United States kind of seems like a myth to begin with, but then comes and delivers, you know, pretty much from the beginning. I don't know if I'm thinking too much into it, or maybe trying to make too much of a one-for-one comparison, but I feel like there's some parallels at least, right?
Yeah, there are. I think more so than anything, it's just the injury concerns, because like people That's were true. Pretty certain, you know, I mean, we were young when Yao came into the league, but right. from what I remember, people were pretty certain about how dominant Yao could be in the NBA mm-hmm. once he does come over. It was just, you know, injuries eventually ended up derailing his career because of how big he is. It's just hard to stay healthy when you are that big. And ESPN's Jonathan Givinny actually did a feature on Victor Wembanyama in a couple weeks back, and just talking about, you know, the different like stretches in things that he's eating, in ways that he's walking, that, you know, they're trying to get ahead of this, you know, knowing that he's 7'5" and it is really hard to stay healthy when you're that big. So I think it is a similar comparison to Yao in the sense that there's little to no hesitation, like I said, that he is going to be an awesome NBA player. Like, his skill set translates perfectly to today's NBA. He can shoot from the outside. He can handle the ball. It's almost Kevin Durant-esque, the way that he can create his own shot as someone who is well over 7 feet. But he also protects the rim like Anthony Davis did in college. It's you know, ridiculous. And that's why everyone is so sure about Victor Wembanyama as an NBA prospect. It's just, you know, when you're that big, how do you find a way to stay healthy? And it's awesome to hear that he's already taking those steps to try and be proactive, to, you know, make sure he's walking the right way and he's doing the right stretches to make sure that, you know, everything stays intact. But, you know, at the end of the day, I have more questions about his health than I do about, you know, how many all-star teams he's going to make or potential MVPs that he's going to win.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Just like it's as surefire of a pick as there has ever been, but there are things that you can't control. And I think that's obviously naturally going to be something that you worry about with any prospect, but specifically one that's 7'5" and, you know, has the physical attributes that are very intriguing, but also come with set of risk as anything else does. And it's also interesting, you know, to circle back on the guys you talked about, whether it's, you know, Jalen Green or Jonathan Kuminga or LaMelo Ball or any of those guys, kind of looking at them as pioneers, and even talking about Brandon Jennings way back when, as pioneers, you know, kind of doing an alternative method to come to the league, and now thinking about, you know, the way that we're going to see that continue to change. And there's kind of a balance now. I think the word you used was cool, because we're still going to see guys, you know, come out of college, and we're going to still see guys come out of the Overtime Elite and the G League Ignite, and guys come from overseas. And now it's just more options and more opportunities for guys to play, also get paid to play basketball before making it to the NBA, and then get to the NBA and have immediate impact on the league, because we've seen guys do it from all different levels now. I think that's the most exciting thing. So before we go to a quick break, I'm going to ask you real quick, just given the state of the NCAA and the way things are, and when you're evaluating guys, do you think that there's still a way that guys can help their stock in the NCAA tournament? Or do you think that that's kind of a foregone, long gone, I guess, concept, just given the way the landscape has changed?
One thing that stuck out to me last year that I read for the first time, The Athletic's John Hollinger, who used to be in the Memphis Grizzlies front office, wrote an article about how NBA scouts and talent evaluators almost hate the NCAA tournament, because that's when the most eyes are on these prospects mm-hmm. and people that weren't evaluated. And when I say people, I don't mean, you know, fans. I mean, even NBA front office members that have not been watching college basketball mm-hmm. all season, they tune into this, you know, these 3-4 weeks of games. and then all of a sudden are putting pressure on the talent evaluators who've been scouting these guys all year long and telling them, oh, well, I saw this in the NCAA tournament. I saw this in the NCAA tournament. And they're like, well, I've been scouting this kid since he was like 16 and in high school. So I thought that was very interesting. And that was, you know, something that I had never really heard, or a perspective I had never really heard before. But, you know, with that being said, absolutely. The answer is absolutely that players can help their draft stock in the NCAA tournament. I think right off the bat, you know, someone like Benedict Mathurin last year, who was awesome in Arizona's run in the NCAA tournament, I think he really helped his draft stock. I think Paolo Banchero is someone who was kind of flirting with that number one spot all year long. And obviously it came all the way down to draft day when, you know, the Magic eventually elected to take him number one overall. But he was the best player by far for Duke during that NCAA tournament run to the Final Four. So, you know, even if you're one of the top guys in the country, and we'll talk about this a little bit when we get to Brandon Miller and we break down the prospects a little bit more, but there's always something more to prove, and the stage doesn't get any brighter than the NCAA tournament. So there's a lot to look forward to this week.
Yeah, I think that, you know, one thing that our tournament coverage and tournament prep over at the Sporting News, again, shameless plug, but go check that out. We have a lot breaking down all the matchups going into the tournament, and we'll have more throughout the tournament. But you're reminded just how much college basketball gets played. There are 350 teams in college basketball. It's pretty much impossible to keep up with everything that's going on unless that's your job, like those scouts do. But, you know, you learned about guys who are, you know, the Missouri Valley player of the year as sophomores, becoming the fourth to do that. And that's Tucker DeVries at Drake, who's a name you might want to be familiar with because he's put himself in company with AJ Green, who plays for the Bucks, and Fred VanVleet, who plays for the Raptors, as guys who earned that honor. I think Doug McDermott was the other guy. So history would tell you that that's probably an NBA player. But just thinking about that and just the amount of basketball that it is, and you get to see the best of the best, you know, especially that first weekend of basketball when there's games going on around the clock. It's a lot to do, and you get to see guys go head to head in situations that they probably wouldn't get to have normally, and they get to prove themselves and improve their stock. And a lot of that stuff happens. I alluded to it before, but after this quick break, we'll have Kyle talk about the top five NBA prospects in this year's NCAA tournament, and who you should keep an eye on as you begin to circle your calendars for the games in the 2023 NCAA tournament. Welcome back to NBA Sound System. Gil McGregor with Kyle Irving, and we talked about it a lot that this year is a little bit different in that not all of the top prospects in the NBA draft are playing NCAA basketball, but there are still some big name players to keep an eye on in the NCAA tournament. So Kyle, I'll give you the floor and let you rank the top five players to keep an eye on in this year's NCAA tournament with respect to their NBA draft stock.
I guess we'll start, you know, at the bottom with number five and work our way up. And to me, the number five prospect in this year's NCAA tournament, and I actually think that he could even be higher on this list, is Arkansas guard Anthony Black. He's someone who really made the most of his opportunity this year. Arkansas had a loaded freshman incoming class. Nick Smith Jr. was projected to be the first college player taken off the board in the preseason, but a nagging knee injury has forced him to only play 12 games this season. He's finally starting to get back into a groove come NCAA tournament time, and he's someone who has a lot to prove during this NCAA tournament. But in his absence, Anthony Black really stepped up as the go-to player for, you know, still a very tough Arkansas team. He has a ton of size. I mean, 6'7" as a point guard, you know, that's almost forward size at the NBA level. He reminds me a lot of Josh Giddey. He has shades of Josh Giddey in his game, just in the sense that you can't speed him up. He's always playing under his own control. Unbelievable playmaker. He's not a non-shooter by any means, but, you know, there's still some work to be done with that outside shot. He does a lot of his scoring around the rim. He's someone that I'm going to be watching very closely during this Arkansas run this March. Coming in after that, number four, Grady Dick out of Kansas. He's someone that you'll see a ton out of because Kansas is one of the best teams in the country. He's one of the best shooters in this draft class. He basically shot it at 40% this season, shooting about 6 threes per game. I hate to use sneaky athleticism, but he really is a sneaky athlete. To me, he actually has a little bit of Klay Thompson in his game just because of his ability to, you know, knock down threes from range. He can come off screens. He can create for himself off the dribble. And you'll see him do all sorts of those things for Kansas during this NCAA tournament run. After that, at number three, I like Keyonte George out of Baylor. He is one of my personal favorite prospects to watch. And I understand that you'll look at Keyonte George, and if you were to look up his stats, you would wonder how someone who's shooting under 40% from, you know, the field on the entire season is ranked this high as a prospect. But, you know, he already has an NBA caliber arsenal of ways to create his own shot. He can shoot it from range. He can attack off the dribble. He's got solid positional size as a shooting guard at 6'4". You know, he's someone who, if you catch him on his best nights, you'll understand why I think he is one of the best prospects in this draft class. But if you catch him on an off night, you know, you're going to wonder how this kid is ever going to make a living in the NBA. For that reason, I think he has some Jordan Poole in him, because there are moments where you watch Jordan Poole and you're like, this is, you know, you understand why the Warriors gave him the contract that they did. But on other nights when Jordan Poole doesn't have it, you know, what else is he really bringing to the table if his shot's not falling? And I think, you know, Keyonte George has some of that in him. I think Benedict Mathurin is another comparison for him, because, again, we talked about how Benedict Mathurin is someone who really helped his draft stock in last year's NCAA tournament. And I think Keyonte George is, you know, if he starts feeling it at the beginning of the NCAA tournament, he could single-handedly carry Baylor on a deep tournament run that really increases his draft stock, because I already think that, you know, he's kind of a flashy, electrifying player that scouts are going to draw themselves to. Coming in at number two is Jairus Walker, a forward, freshman forward out of Houston. Again, Houston, one of the top teams in the country this year. They're number one overall seed. Walker is someone who, you know, if you're watching Houston, you'll see the plays that he makes and the way he impacts winning. I always say that he looks more like an edge rusher than a football player if edge rushers were 6'8". You know, he has an NBA body already, freak athlete. He can step outside and he's getting more comfortable knocking down threes. He's actually shown more offensive progress than I think people, you know, expected from him during his freshman season. He has a tendency to kind of fall into the background because it's an upperclassman Houston team that's led by a veteran guard, Marcus Sasser, who takes a lot of shots. You know, it's a very team-oriented game in Houston, and it's not all about, you know, feeding the NBA prospect. He kind of gets his wherever he can. But in terms of player comparison, I feel like he has a lot of Aaron Gordon in his game because of his athleticism. He's already a high-level defender. He's someone that can step outside and knock down shots, but he also does a lot of damage as a, you know, powerful and physical interior presence. So he's someone else I'll have an eye on. And then at number one, I think at this point, he is the consensus number one prospect in college basketball, and that's Brandon Miller out of Alabama. Unfortunately, obviously his name has been associated, with, you know, that murder trial, in Alabama this year. But when you're watching him on the basketball floor, you know, speaking strictly from a basketball perspective here, you're looking at a 6'9" wing who can do just about everything offensively. You know, he's a little raw in terms of a shot creator, but I mean, the guy shot over 40% and he was attempting over 7 threes per game this season at a very high clip. You know, he reminds me a lot of Brandon Ingram, just the long arms and the way that he gets to his spots. It's very methodical. It's very effortless and easy for Brandon Miller to get going. And he's efficient too. You know, he's an efficient scorer. He's not just a chucker. So, you know, Alabama was the number one overall seed in this year's NCAA tournament. Brandon Miller was a big part of that and a big reason for that. And he is, you know, almost far and away at this point, the number one prospect in the NCAA to watch during March Madness.
It's interesting. You know, I know we talked, you know, in the first part, it's about the guys who, you know, are playing overseas or playing in these alternative leagues. It kind of feels like this college draft class is almost like a separate draft. I know that they're all in the same draft, and I know a lot of these guys probably know one another, but it's just funny to kind of talk about these guys separately because it is completely a different league. But I guess when you talk about some of these guys and what you've seen from them, because the college game is so different from anything else, I guess when you look at what guys are able to do with less spacing, shorter games, obviously, slower pace, I think, what is it that you think is the biggest transferable skill or the biggest thing that you think you can take from, you know, what you see a guy do on the college level to what they can do, you know, immediately at the NBA level?
I think, like, if you were to almost go prospect by prospect for the players that I just said, like, there are different things that they do in the NCAA compared to, like, how they'll perform in the NBA. Like, Anthony Black, for example, isn't running a ton of pick and rolls, but he's someone who is, you know, an extremely savvy passer and playmaker. He's always making the right reads, and I think he'll really excel at the next level doing that. But he doesn't get to do a ton of that at Arkansas. A lot of his, you know, setups are in transition and things like that. Someone like Grady Dick, you know, he's a lights out shooter, but he's doing more than just spotting up on the perimeter. And obviously he has a ton of attention. He averaged 14 points per game. He's one of the lead scorers for Kansas. He's creating for himself more at Kansas than I think he will at the NBA level, where he'll be more of a 3-and-D type guy. You look at Keyonte George, I think he's someone who actually is playing a very similar game that he will in the NBA. Just, you know, that shot creator, microwave scorer off the bench type role. Just obviously the difference there will be that, like you said, there'll be a lot more spacing and, you know, he won't be seeing double teams every time he touches the ball. When you look at someone like Jairus Walker, his ability to step out and shoot the three is going to shine a lot more at the NBA level. I also think that he's, you know, big and physical and athletic enough to play small ball five, where he's really playing a true four, almost like on the wing for Houston. So, you know, his role kind of changes there. And then you look at someone like Brandon Miller, who has the ball in his hands at all times. You know, he's scoring from all three levels, doing a lot of his damage from the perimeter. That's, you know, very similar and transferable to how his role will play out in the NBA. But, you know, it is interesting to think about how some of those other guys, I think about Scoot Henderson, for example, where, you know, he's someone who, if he was playing in college, he is so physically gifted at this stage in his career. Like, there's no way he even looks like an 18-year-old. His shoulders are so broad and he's so strong, and just that breakaway speed and that quick first step is something that I don't think many college kids could keep up with. So even though in the G League, you know, there are guys who are big and strong and fast enough to, you know, kind of bump him around a little bit and disrupt him off his game. Like, he'd probably average 25 points per game with ease in college, just because no one could match that physicality. So, you know, it's kind of a give and take on both sides of it for the players that aren't in the NCAA and the players that are. But, you know, for the players that are in the NCAA, I think that, you know, just because they're not playing the exact same role they'd play at the NBA level doesn't necessarily mean they're, you know, hurting themselves, because I think it'll just make them more well-rounded when it comes to, you know, finding more of a defined role at the NBA level.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, because like you mentioned specifically, like somebody like Grady Dick, right? Like, he's asked to do a lot of things at Kansas, and he's doing a good job of doing a lot of things, playing at a high level, because the Big 12 is a very difficult conference. But he lands with a team, late lottery, whatever, and he's only asked to do one or two things, and he already knows how to do a lot of things. He can build that out, you know, as his NBA career moves on. I think that's a good way to put that and look at it. I think another interesting thing about these guys, pretty much all of them that you mentioned, I know you mentioned, you know, Baylor could go on a deep run. Alabama is the number one overall seed in the tournament. Houston is another team that could make a run to win a title. These guys are playing big roles, Kansas as well, playing big roles on teams that can do big things in NCAA tournament. And it's interesting to look on the flip side, because there have been guys who are 3-, 4-, 5-year college players who are really good college players. And it's not even meant as a slight or to be disrespectful to them, but you kind of know how to cap that. That's just the reality of it. I look at Indiana, and Trace Jackson Davis is a guy who is a very, very, very good college player. He was a very good college player last year, but people never really talked about him as an NBA guy. Look at their in-state rival, Canada's own Zach Edey, is a guy who I saw on Twitter somebody described him as college Shaq, because he is 7'4", and there's not really much that you can do with him because he's 7'4" and just dominant on the block. So I guess we can talk about Zach Edey and the Purdue Boilermakers. One, for those people out there filling out their brackets, the Big Ten champions of the regular season and the conference tournament as well. I know you've been one that's been a little iffy on that team. So what do you think about Purdue and Zach Edey on the interior? And how is this team better than it was last year after losing a guy like Jaden Ivey?
I think that, you know, Zach Edey, you know, you just compared him to college Shaq. I think John Rothstein has been saying it since day one. He's the Yao Ming of college basketball. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're watching Purdue play, and even if you've never seen them before, you were like, who is this massive human being that is taking up all this space in the paint? And, you know, he's not someone that is just, you know, drop step dunking, or, I mean, he's protecting the rim at a high level, but, you know, he's got some soft touch to his game. You know, he's got these little post hooks and, you know, these little shimmies for, you know, over the shoulder looks and stuff like that. Like, he's scoring around the paint outside of just dunking the ball by being bigger than everybody else. So even though he's not someone that is projected to be a first round pick in the NBA, I think he's someone that will absolutely get a look at the NBA level as a second rounder. I think, you know, even someone like Luka Garza, who again was just a lot bigger than everybody else at the NCAA level. He absolutely dominated. He was Naismith Player of the Year and everything like that. You know, he's stuck around in the NBA for a little bit, for a couple of years now, I think 2 years now, you know, just playing in the G League and trying to carve out a role. So I think for Zach Edey, it's going to be, I don't think he has much more to prove, like, in this NCAA tournament. Like you said, Purdue has already won the Big Ten regular season and Big Ten tournament title. They won 30 games this year. They're one of the best teams in the country. He's already face value for talent evaluators and things like that. Like, I think that the second round is probably his cap of where a team will be willing to roll the dice on him. But, you know, with that being said, if Purdue were to make a run to the national championship, who's to say it's some sort of contender in the back end of the first round who can be patient and, you know, kind of allow him to work on what he'll do at the next level, which is doing a lot of screening and protecting, you know, just rim running, getting more fluid, trying to defend on the perimeter, things like that, working on those weaknesses. Maybe they will take a swing at him, but for right now, I see Zach Edey as a second round pick.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, Luka Garza was a guy, as I talked through it, especially even like the Big Ten part of it too, right? And I know that Luka Garza was a guy who, when he came to the league, he really dedicated a lot to kind of transforming his body a bit. And I know one thing I remember, and this will always stand out because one, it's my favorite food, but he said he stopped eating bread altogether in order to, and I'm sorry. Yes. Bread is my favorite food. I don't know why, but I eat a lot of bread. I can get full off bread, but he stopped eating bread. He shed a lot of weight and he did everything he could to kind of speed his feet up and get better as far as that goes. So that was like one of the biggest hurdles for him to kind of find a spot in the NBA. And it's interesting to look at that and think about Zach Edey. You know, maybe even if he's a guy who plays spot minutes, you know, for a team. And I think the other piece to that is thinking about somebody who's already been representing Canada internationally, you know, as an amateur, and looking at, you talk about, you know, who's going to go and play for Canada at the World Cup this year. And also, you know, when they play in the Olympics in Paris, I think 2024, Paris, when they try to play in the Olympics in 2024. But thinking about him as a guy who playing in the FIBA game, you know, hopefully alongside Jamal Murray, Andrew Wiggins, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, that actually is pretty encouraging and scary, you know, for a Canada team that's looking to medal in the coming years.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of Canada's biggest voids is in the middle, a center. Yeah. And I think that Zach Edey, even if he's not someone who, like I said, is going to be like a lottery pick or first round pick in the NBA draft, like there's no reason that he can't be the guy that fills the middle for Canada, you know, at the FIBA level. I like Zach Edey's game. I do think that, you know, there is, like you just said, kind of like a role for him potentially in the NBA to play spot minutes and, you know, just protect the paint and, you know, use up fouls, play physical with some of the best bigs in the league, because, you know, at the end of the day, he is like 7'3" or 7'4". And, yeah, you know, he can throw that body around and find a way to disrupt even some of the best centers in the game. It's just that, you know, for a player like that, there is a very hard cap on his ceiling. And it feels like, you know, he's not even someone like Luka Garza who has experimented stepping outside and shooting threes. Like Zach Edey hasn't attempted one three-pointer the entire year. Matt Painter, actually, I heard a quote over the weekend that Matt Painter had joked around with Zach Edey that if you look down, your feet aren't in the paint, don't shoot it. So, you know, he's limited in that sense. But at the same time, you know, like you said, in a spot role, I don't see why not.
Yeah, and something to be said, because Matt Painter would know a thing or two about what to tell big men. Purdue always has a 7-foot-plus guy. And I say that as somebody who played his first ever college game against A.J. Hammonds. And yes, I had to guard A.J. Hammonds. So, Kyle, I know you could probably imagine how that went for me. I am every bit of 6'3". A.J. Hammonds is 7-foot-plus and probably 275-plus. So, shout-out to Purdue for keeping the traditional big man alive. You know, when you're looking at the bracket, there are a couple other Canadians worth keeping an eye on. Ryan Nimhard at Creighton, Big East Freshman of the Year a few years back, younger brother of Pacers standout rookie Andrew Nimhard. He tore his ACL last year, but he's back and ready to hopefully try and lead the Blue Jays to a run. They're a sixth seed. They did well. And also, if you're looking at the Big East champions, Marquette, Olivier Maxence-Prosper, representing the NBA Academy, in addition to representing Canada. He and the Golden Eagles will try to make a run under Shaka Smart. Now, we're talking about Canada. We're talking about Nick Nurse leading the Canadian national team. We got to talk about the Raptors a little bit as well. They have lost three in a row. They head back home, did what they could on that road trip. Honestly, they probably needed to do better. Went 1-4, split games with the Wizards, then lost to the Nuggets, Clippers, and Lakers. In the middle of all that, Fred VanVleet had some colorful words about the officiating and is now $30,000, I guess his pockets are $30,000 lighter. I guess he got his money's worth based on his comments. So, you know, we talk about the Raptors. They enter the week that we're talking about. They're due for a rematch with the Nuggets. We talked about who are slumping a bit. The Raptors are still kind of firmly, not even as firm in that play-in tournament position. They're 32-36, ninth in the Eastern Conference. So, it kind of feels like the Raptors are either going to make a run. Well, it doesn't feel like this is what's going to happen. The Raptors are going to make a run and get the eighth seed, or they're going to continue at this trajectory and probably just miss the playoffs. But given everything that they've done, bringing Poeltl back, they answer the center question. When you look at where they're probably going to pick between, let's call it 12-16, what need do you think the Raptors should try and fill based on the players available in this draft class? And do you think it's going to be a guy from an alternative league or an NCAA player that the Raptors fans maybe should keep an eye on during this tournament?
I think that kind of depends on where the Raptors ultimately end up this season, which is a massive question mark at this point. Because like you said, you know, at one point it felt like they were firmly in that play-in tournament race, and now they're in danger of missing the playoffs altogether. In my latest mock draft, I had them taking Keontae George out of Baylor. I just think they could use that type of scoring prowess, someone that can create their own shot, someone that can shoot it from the outside. He is a combo guard, so he can handle the ball a little bit as a point guard as well. I feel like he kind of fits that mold of what the Raptors need. But, you know, another player that we brought up in this conversation, Grady Dick, is someone that the Raptors could use. Because, again, perimeter shooting becomes their number one priority now that they've filled the Jakob Poeltl. Now the Jakob Poeltl has filled the void in the middle. So I think Grady Dick is someone that I could see the Raptors going after and targeting just as a perimeter shooter of his caliber. There are two other guards to me who I think actually the Raptors would be kind of wise to take a swing on. I think one is Nick Smith Jr., who I talked about a little bit. You know, at one point people thought he was going to be the first college basketball player off the board, but a nagging knee injury has really kind of kept him out of rhythm the entire season. He started to pull it together. He scored over 24 points in 3 out of his last 4 games of the regular season. And I think that the NCAA tournament will be a massive platform for him to prove that I'm still that guy that people thought I was at the beginning of the season. I could see the Raptors taking a swing on a player like that because, again, like, they could use that sort of three-level scorer who can create his own shot, shoot from the outside a little bit. And then another player, this would probably be a little bit more of a reach in the Raptors' range, but I think Jalen Hood-Schifino, a freshman out of Indiana, who has been that 1-2 punch with Trayce Jackson-Davis. He's another player who, you know, at this moment, there are games where, kind of like I said with Keontae George, there are games where if you watch him play, he doesn't even look like an NBA player, but then he has those moments where, you know, he's running a pick and roll and he's, you know, lights out from the mid range and can shoot from the outside a little bit. So he's had some highs and lows this season as well. But I do think that, you know, with Fred VanVleet's potential impending free agency, he's another player that the Raptors could look at if they look to target a true point guard.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the Raptors this offseason, and you got three big question marks. We've talked about it a lot. It's Fred VanVleet potentially testing the free agency waters, Gary Trent Jr. doing the same thing, and then does OG Anunoby again maybe push for a trade based on reports that in the past it was never substantiated, and OG has kind of talked those rumors down in a very OG way. But thinking about those three guys, right, like there's a little bit of an overlap as far as like the shooting part. Well, OG has – his shooting's fallen off, you know, after a hot start to the season. But Gary Trent Jr., that's supposed to be his job with this team. And it's no secret that ever since Kyle Lowry left, there's been a big hole as far as just having, you know, two lead guards, you know, a guy capable of leading the first unit and a guy capable of leading the second unit. Malachi Flynn was supposed to be that guy. It just hasn't worked out for him in Toronto. So I think it's very interesting to talk about, you know, whether it's going to be a point guard that they lean towards, or is it going to be a guy on the wing who brings shooting? And obviously, you know, it'll definitely impact the Raptors' approach to free agency. Maybe this is crazy, but I know we've talked about this, and you know that a guy like Peyton Pritchard has asked for a larger role. I don't know if he could end up landing, you know, in a division rival, but he's a guy who could probably bring something to Toronto that they've needed, just as far as having a steady hand and a guy who has some confidence about him and he knows what he's expected to do off the bench and just wants a bigger role. Plus there's the history between he and Chris Boucher. They played together at Oregon. But looking just at, you know, just the idea or concept, I guess if I were to ask you, what is the biggest hole you think the Raptors need to fill right now, just based on how everything is right now, the Raptors need to fill this void when they're planning for the NBA draft?
I think it's perimeter shooting is number one. And then number two is, like you said, kind of that second lead guard, like somebody who can, you know, really anchor that second unit in the way that people thought Malachi Flynn was going to be able to. I'm actually going to bring up another name that I just, as you were talking, I realized I blanked on when you asked me if players to watch if you're a Raptors fan. Kaysen Wallace out of Kentucky is another one who I think would be a great fit for the Raptors culture. He's one of the best perimeter defenders in this class. Incredible hands, great anticipation. He's an awesome playmaker. His jump shot hasn't come along the way that, you know, I probably would have liked to see this year, but he is another player who I think the Raptors could certainly target and would fill a need at the point guard position. So, you know, there's a lot of players in the range where the Raptors are going to be selected that could help fit these needs. And I think that's massive for Toronto that, you know, even if they were to make it to the play-in tournament and get bounced in the first round or something like that, it wouldn't be a waste because there are going to be players that fill the voids they need the most, you know, at that anywhere between 8 to 12 range. So if you're a Raptors fan, you should be excited about that. But, you know, more so than anything, it's worth tuning into the NCAA tournament because there are going to be a lot of teams playing and a lot of prospects playing that, you know, fit that need, the Raptors, you know, their biggest need.
Yeah, crucial stretch for the Raptors. I mentioned they're 32-36 back at home for a three-game homestand. And, of course, I got to plug it in, three guys who made their name in college basketball, and they all hail from Canada. Jamal Murray and the Nuggets in Toronto on Tuesday. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder, and Lu Dort as well on Thursday. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker and the Timberwolves are in Toronto on Saturday. So big week for the Raptors, back-to-back-to-back Northwest Division opponents. Carlin, shout out to you if you hear this. I'm talking divisions on NBA Sound System. But again, the Raptors are right there. You know, they're still in ninth as of right now. The Bulls have snuck back in. The Pacers and Wizards are right there lurking, but the Wizards have stumbled a bit. So it'll be very interesting to see whether or not we will get a play-in tournament game between the Raptors and Bulls and have DeMar DeRozan in a winner-takes-all game in Toronto. I'm not sure if fans' hearts are ready for that, but we will see. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's edition, the March Madness edition of NBA Sound System, featuring the Sporting News NBA draft expert, Kyle Irving. It's always a pleasure to have Kyle on here. And this is a reminder to subscribe to NBA Sound System wherever you get your podcasts. We will have more leading up to the NBA draft, as well as more on the big race and all the jumbling in the standings in the Eastern and Western Conference with a little bit under a month left in the season. Nothing is set in stone, and there is a lot that will change before the year ends. For Kyle Irving, I am Gil McGregor. We will catch you here same time next week. We'll be right back.